This is Chief of Anything, created by Christian Kohlhoff and Michael Portz. Our podcasts serve the purpose of growing people skills for great success, excellent business results, and a happy, healthy people culture.
If this podcast is useful for you, please give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends. We love to hear from you, and we are always happy to learn how we can help teams achieve great success or overcome people pains. All contact details are in the show notes. Much success.
Conversation 6. Body language. Say my name, say my name. Beyonce with Destiny's Child.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Christian.
Michael, we're still talking about the iceberg of communication, about how I successfully communicate in order to influence, because leadership, and that's what it's all about here, is the ability to influence. The success of my communication depends 70% on whether I manage to establish rapport with my counterpart or build a trusting interrelationship and make sure the chemistry is right. So far, we've explained how I can achieve this by smiling, making eye contact, and shaking hands. Are there any other techniques for creating rapport, Michael?
Well, Christian, it helps to address people by their name to build up rapport. In the right dosage, of course. We may have just overdone it a little bit. Addressing people directly using their name is a sign of appreciation. It shows that I know who you are, that I know your name, and that it is worthy of pronouncing it. This is usually positively perceived. It also works in groups. If the members of a group don't all know each other, it helps if those who do address each other by name repeatedly in front of the others. These are rapport boosters that in turn improve the group's rapport, thus making the team more effective. Suddenly, the participants learn each other's names, address each other by name as well, and a respectful relationship develops within the group. A rapport is created. It prevents embarrassing moments like, what's your name again? This is very unpleasant. I know this myself. I don't like to constantly struggle to remember someone's name, especially after the person has already introduced himself. It helps if everyone repeats the names more often. Repeat 3 times to convince and 6 times to memorize. Names help to build rapport.
That's why all participants in our seminars wear name badges. Everyone has a name tag and can add a little something to it. This is how we engage in conversation and repeat the name automatically. It draws attention to the name and gives it something special, something valuable.
The name tag with the drawing serves the visual channel. We already talked about the different VACOG sensory channels and different preferences of people. Half of all people have primarily a visual preference, including me. 40% have mainly an auditory preference, including you. 10% have more of a kinesthetic preference, with feeling being very important. When I pronounce the name, I move into the auditory channel and target 40% of people. Another 50% I reach through a visual name tag. So I have a good chance to build rapport by pronouncing names and name tags. Therefore, this is often common practice in meetings or at conferences. It increases the chances of successful communication.
Smiling, eye contact, handshake, pronouncing names. What other techniques are there to create rapport?
There are still a few techniques on the physical, kinesthetic level. In the cafe situation, you mentioned body language. You described that adjusting your posture can seem unnatural. I can tell because my counterpart accuses me of imitating him. Are you imitating me? This reaction is a sign that your counterpart is a mismatch.
With me, I can definitely see this risk. I often don't notice how my attitude changes or that of my counterpart. I probably wouldn't notice it either if he imitated me. It happens unconsciously.
It's an unconscious competence. When we give our seminars and training sessions and dive deep into the neuro-linguistic programming matter, I perceive this quite consciously. When I'm back in my everyday life and my attention is focused on other things, all this happens unconsciously. What I do perceive quite consciously is when someone completely loses it with his body language. This can be damaging to the rapport. I once had a meeting, and to my understanding, I behaved quite normally. My interlocutor suddenly sat down sideways on his chair, put one leg over the armrest, and crossed his right arm behind his head and his left arm behind the backrest. It looked totally strange.
Was that me? That happens to me sometimes.
It's totally okay. Posture is individual, and I have nothing against sitting comfortably. I just consciously noticed at that moment that I had difficulties concentrating on the conversation. My full attention was on this posture. I was totally distracted. It was a real rapport killer. Making my communication successful was difficult because the body language was not in sync and didn't help me in the situation. Maybe it was comfortable and helpful for my counterpart. Maybe he took a lot out of the conversation. I couldn't tell.
Did you then sit down in the same way to produce rapport?
Let's put it this way. I learned about a new frontier. If I had adapted to his posture, it wouldn't have felt natural. He definitely would have found that inappropriate. It was a funny situation, yet not exactly conducive to strengthening our relationship. When I meet new people, I like to use the adjustment of my posture in moderation to be able to deal with each other openly and quickly. I don't want my body language to get in the way. I rather want it to help me quickly establish a connection and create chemistry between my conversation partner and me. So I try to adjust my charisma so that it's helpful for my communication behavior.
Of course. It's also an interesting experience to realize that it's difficult to build a relationship with someone sitting across from you and to become aware that it's because of their posture. So the posture of the other person can also prevent you from establishing rapport.
Yes, exactly.
So I then take the intellectual detour and accept that she might be a mismatch and still manage to communicate with her successfully in another way.
Right. Good point. Even if someone else's posture irritates me, I can still make the decision to try to establish rapport. There's another technique that comes to mind, which is also physical. Gestures. The way I use my hands. Here, too, I like to first observe how my counterpart behaves. This helps me to get into the groove and use my hands a little more or a little less, depending on what I observe in my counterpart. If my conversation partner gestures wildly and fiercely, I can also use my hands more strongly, even if it's not really my thing at first. I still remain natural and try to do it my own way. I just use my gestures a bit more than someone who sits there calmly with folded hands. In the international context, I have learned that there are very few gestures, in fact, 5 that I've identified, that are universal. That's why they are especially valuable, and I use them as a kind of safe base. With these gestures, I know I can't do much wrong, no matter who sits in front of me or where they are from. One of these gestures is the raised index finger in the sense of, here is a point that is very important. This gesture is called the pointer. Everyone understands it. It reminds me of a typical teacher's gesture, so I understand when some people don't like the raised index finger very much. At least it's not misunderstood, and I can emphasize an important point with it. Of course, my index finger must not point at my counterpart. That's generally perceived as offensive. It typically looks like a weapon, a sword, or a dagger. Pointing at someone is also internationally perceived as rude. In the past, it was popular to point with 5 fingers at someone, and I did that too. It's much worse than pointing with the index finger. I practically draw 5 knives at the same time, which fly at a person. Everything that flies at me is threatening at first. The raised index finger, in the sense of, that's an important point, is okay. It's a universal gesture that works quite well. Another international gesture is openness. Here, I show my open palms facing forward. Jesus was often depicted in this way, which is why some people call it the Jesus pose. In any case, it suggests openness, that I am open to the topics we are talking about and that I am not hiding anything. I let my hands hang down casually to the side of my body with the palms facing forward, as in many depictions of Jesus. Another gesture is the thinker. I have one hand on my chin and pay full attention to the person opposite me. It seems as if I'm thinking about everything that my conversation partner is telling me. It also has an important effect on me. If I notice that my thoughts drift a little bit during a conversation, I take my hand to my chin and am immediately focused on my counterpart again. This helps me to stay focused and direct myself into a state in which I listen better. By nature, I'm not the best listener in the world. My wife will surely cheer when she reads or hears this. This gesture helps me to listen better.
So your body immediately understands your thinking pose as a signal that says, attention, here we go, listen now. Do you mean it like that?
Yes, exactly. Let me come back to our understanding of leadership. Leadership is my ability to influence. We had established that I lead myself first and foremost. That is, influence myself by leading myself. The thinker pose is a method to influence myself. It works great for me. It's important that the fingers are on the chin, not over the mouth. If the fingers are over the mouth, I give the impression that something bad has happened. Oh my God, something bad happened. That's why I go into this typical thinker position with my fingers on my chin, like in classical Greek sculptures or old drawings.
We perceive gestures visually and kinesthetically. There are also the so-called universal sounds, speech gestures, so to speak.
What's your sensory preference again?
I have more of an auditory preference.
Oh, I see. I'm painting pictures and gesturing wildly in front of you, and you're talking about sounds.
I'm talking about oh and hmm. I can use these sounds to cheer myself on or even to spoil my mood. In the past, I would sometimes say to myself, "Oh, Koloff, what have you done again?" With this, I can bring myself down at the speed of light. Oh, or even better, "Oh no, Koloff." Then I call myself by my last name. It immediately feels as if someone else is reprimanding me.
Why the hell do you do this? Why do you make yourself feel bad?
I sometimes use it when I want to eat or drink less of something, as a kind of self-discipline. Once I overdid it a bit. Whenever I passed the sausage counter in the supermarket, I quietly said, "Ew," to myself. After only a few times, I automatically gagged when I just smelled the sausages. And that's how I managed to live more vegan, bit by bit. This works well with alcohol as well. It helps me to reach my goals. An inner yes or wow when I've achieved something helps me enormously and confirms me in my actions.
Yeah, it's really great how haunting these sounds are, like emotional conditioning. When someone else makes a sound like that, I'm glad when I manage to detect my own behavioral pattern that's related to it and to fight against it. Whereby for me as a visual type, sounds have less impact than images, like these animated GIFs that every messenger service offers now. I immediately notice that I'm back in my behavior pattern and can consciously decide to curb my typical behavior. Then I try out a different approach.
Oh no.
Great. That works well. I have two more gestures, especially for the visual types among us.
Okay. Show them to us.
Dear listeners, please imagine me standing in front of you, speaking to you, holding my hands in front of my chest with open palms. With this gesture, I'm showing a way into the future. It looks something like I'm holding an imaginary shoebox loosely in my hands. That feels good. I hold the shoebox in front of my body and now move my hands forward step by step, as if I were shaking the shoebox and move it forward a little with each shaking. I often observe this with politicians when they want to convince us of their wonderful way into the future. It's indeed one of the universal gestures that are understood in the same way all over the planet. One name for this gesture is the guide. Calm down is the gesture that looks like I'm making a bed. I hold my hands out about waist level with the palms down and pat my imaginary bedspread at the foot of the bed down one more time after I've shaken it up. With this gesture, I want to say, everything is fine. We have the situation under control and will now take the right steps. Calm down was the last of the universal gestures. The basic rule is that all asymmetrical gestures are less credible than symmetrical gestures, or are even perceived as funny. All the gestures we have discussed so far were symmetrical gestures, except for the thinker pose. Two hands on the chin would look funny. An asymmetrical gesture is, for example, when I lift one hand up and the other hand down. It looks almost clownish. Turning one leg to the side is also an asymmetric gesture. Everything that is slant and does not appear symmetrical has less impact. Now we have gone through all the relevant gestures and have also discussed some physical things.
Have we now completely covered the iceberg?
Well, not quite yet. Successful communication depends 70% on rapport. We are now done with that. So we'll still talk about the 25% that depends on the how, on the way I communicate. Then we'll talk about the remaining 5%, the what, the content of our communication.
So that was the easy part. The next one follows.
Yes, everything is under control. The future will be wonderful.
Everyone probably knows these gestures. From now on, I will be more conscious of who uses them and when, and also in which situations I use them myself. It's good to know that all these subconscious and at the same time visible actions mean something. It's like a kind of secret language that is known all over the world and which I will learn to decode from now on.
This is Chief of Anything, created by Christian Kohlhoff and Michael Portz. Our podcasts serve the purpose of growing people skills for great success, excellent business results, and a happy, healthy people culture.
If this podcast is useful for you, please give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends. We love to hear from you, and we are always happy to learn how we can help teams achieve great success or overcome people pains. All contact details are in the show notes. Much success.